You're listening to another Penguin Radio podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the Communications and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California, where our chair is Mari Pileggi. I'm Brandon Cadiz, and joined by me today is a very, very special guest, Mr. Otis Taylor, an East Bay columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. He spent a decade plus working for Columbia SC, the state newspaper, covering issues about the arts, the culture, and the entertainment industry. And he currently works in the East Bay relating to diversity and equality, also talking about the region's history, the culture, and politics. So, Mr. Taylor, it's a pleasure to have you on here. Thank you.
Thank you. This is kind of cool being back on college radio and on another campus. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, and obviously you tackling issues here in the East Bay, and we want to talk to you about the recent stance on the whole kneeling issue with athletes across Major League sports. And one particular player I want to talk to you about is here in the Bay Area, the Oakland A's catcher Bruce Maxwell became the first player in Major League Baseball history to take a kneel for the national anthem. Now, I just want your opinion on what your stance on this is, him being the first player to do this in Major League Baseball, where it's less than 3% of an African-American population.
Mm-hmm. Well, I support him fully. I thought that was a brave stance to take. What we're seeing now, NFL and NBA, where the athletes are using their social status for social justice. And I'm of the camp where I'm fine with athletes, you know, voicing their opinions about social issues and politics. Why not? These men and women are idolized, and so we should look to them. It actually creates a fuller portrait of the person. They're not just, you know, a number or a jersey. They're actual people. And it's interesting that Maxwell plays for the A's, and he did that. But, you know, social activism has a history here in the Bay Area of athletes doing that.
Mm-hmm. And touching on that part, you talk about President Trump's comments about Colin Kaepernick and the rest of the NFL athletes, calling them a son of a you fill in the rest there, but and him and President Trump also drawing the invitation from the Golden State Warriors for the whole team to come participate. And it's just the issue. It's kind of funny how it all connects to the Bay Area. And for both sides, you think about people saying that kneeling is disrespectful for it supporting the country and the military, but on the other side, you also have to shed light on the issue of equality, and that's what those players are doing. Like, what's your opinion on those two stances? There's almost that divide of the one side saying it has to do of being respectful to the country and the flag and the military, but the other side saying they're doing it to for these people that don't have a voice.
Well, you notice what you just said, the flag and the military. And the Pledge of Allegiance is to the flag. The military component comes in because the NFL markets itself as a partner of the United States military. Now, that's where I think the argument has gotten misconstrued, because, you know, we're talking about the flag and what it represents and this country, and we're not one nation, because there are people who have been historically disenfranchised and underrepresented. The military aspect is something brand new. That's the NFL marketing a product as being this united front with servicemen. It makes good visuals. And now the argument is that if you don't stand for the national anthem, you're not supporting the military. And I think that's just a false equivalent.
Yeah, and especially one of your stories that you did is crime is never an acceptable form of protest. And that talked about different arsonist groups burning down several housing, affordable housing buildings.
Allegedly.
In Oakland. And you talked about how that's not going to help the whole situation. Doing so violently is not going to change the situation. So how do you connect that with what the players are doing? They're kneeling because of this issue to shed light, and they're doing so in a peaceful way where President Donald Trump says those people in Charlottesville are, they have fine people on both sides, but calls Colin Kaepernick a SOB.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're asking me, I think, how I feel about anything the president says, right?
Yes.
He's a buffoon. I don't take anything he says as fact. I think he lies anytime he opens his mouth or uses his Twitter fingers. So him being a barometer of moral aptitude, I think, is just the wrong, you know, he's just defiled the office. The presidency right now is not a moral authority. Now, as far as how I feel about people being upset at the, you know, players peacefully taking a knee, I think that speaks to the white supremacy that still pervades our country. It's okay, we don't want you to destroy things. We want you to, if you want to protest, do it peacefully. Well, nope, don't take a knee. You know, don't do it that way. Don't speak out logically about issues such as black and brown people being murdered by police. I think it speaks to the patriarchy and also white supremacy in our country, where they do not want black and brown people to voice an opinion that is against this happy-go-lucky narrative that is the United States, this American dream that they want to always talk about.
Yeah, and this is all good in the sense that players are kneeling and having their own platform to do this on, but other than Colin Kaepernick, who's donated money, has his own Know Your Rights campaign, mm-hmm. what can these players do outside of their platform in the athletic event to actually shed light on the issue?
Well, for one, when Eric Garner was choked to death by the New York Police Department, players came out with shirts that said, "I can't breathe."
Yes.
When Donald Sterling, former owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, that tape was released of him going on a racist rant, players united to say, we won't stand for this. Players have to use their power that they have, because without them, there wouldn't be a game.
Yes.
You know, the owners have all the power, or it seems all the leverage, but it's really the players. Once the players demand more, definitely now more respect, I think we'll see owners like we've seen in NBA, where they almost applaud the players' rights to protest. But we're going to continue seeing people like LeBron James and Chris Paul speak out against injustices. I think what the president hopes is that by him just saying, "Oh, everything's failing," you know, that people will turn their attention away. Mm-hmm. But the people that want some change in our society are the message that the athletes are sending. That's resonating right now.
Now, what's your opinion on not only players doing it, but more recently, last night during the national anthem, Jordan Sparks, for the national anthem, she wrote, she didn't really necessarily take a knee, but she tackled the issue in a different way by writing out these Bible verses on her hands that were directed towards Donald Trump. I don't remember the exact verses, but to just say that what you're doing is wrong. And Pharrell Williams, in his recent concert, took a knee before performing live to an audience. Do you think these celebrities, not only athletes, should tackle more on the issue?
Oh, well, I think Jordan Sparks, I didn't see what she did, but before the Detroit Lions game, the singer who sang the national anthem, he took a knee at center, mm-hmm. The center of the field. Stevie Wonder took a knee at his concert. I think if you want to support the message, and the message cannot be lost, the message is we're protesting police brutality. We're protesting the disenfranchisement of people historically in this country. That's not going to go away. So, yes, by all means, I don't stand for the pledge, because until I feel that me and the people that I want to speak for and speak to are respected as equals in this country, then this country does not stand for me.
Now, can you just talk about what you do here in the Bay Area that helps and sheds light on these issues and what people in the Bay Area could do to speak up more and not be afraid of sheltering their feelings and doing what's right for them.
Well, so my primary areas of focus on my beat are racial and gender disparities, immigration, mm-hmm. housing, and I also write about cannabis. But my focus is engaging our readers in people and situations that they might overlook or they might think they understand. For instance, homelessness is the narrative of that is completely off because all we hear about is the garbage and the filth and these people not working. And so we've marginalized these people as if that they're other and that we don't need to help them and that we need to overlook them. But one of my I think I've tasked myself with is to humanize homelessness.
Yes.
You know, these are people. And it's the same way with racial and gender disparities. I think for too long we've lived in a system that discounts women's rights and, mm-hmm. and especially in terms of pay equity. And then you're just talking about racial equity. So I try to engage our readers by showing them people, you know, and having them see people and read about people who are going through a struggle that they probably have not taken the time to consider.
Yeah, and I know you talked about this a bit in our class before you came on to radio, but can you talk about just the different campuses here in the Bay Area not accepting those speakers such as Milo because of the issue that they're bringing in, being a troll and not really having a point of what they're sharing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think having conservative speakers on campuses is a good idea if the speech is about conservative politics and how that relates to, I don't know, fiscal responsibility. Mm. But when the speaker just wants to inflame and just wants to spit hateful rhetoric, I think that has no use on college campuses. And I see why it's not just take Berkeley, for instance.
Yeah.
Where there's been a strong resistance to people who claim that they are conservative. But the point is that it's not, you know, Berkeley is the birthplace of the free speech movement, but that was a student movement. Mm-hmm. What's happening now is not the students. It's outsiders. It's locals and outsiders coming together in one place to battle it out over ideology.
Yes.
And I think that campuses have now become a place to actually stage rallies. And in the case of Milo, it's a stage a rally of hate. I mean, it's just pure and simple. It's about hate, and it's about divisiveness, and it's about white supremacy.
Saying it's good to have conservative speakers here mm-hmm. on campus, and you want to hear both sides and hear Greg Popovich, the coach for the San Antonio Spurs, and Steve Kerr, obviously white Americans, but they voiced the same opinion as the minorities. And I feel like Coach Popovich put it out, sent this quote out that's very nice. And he says that, to this day, I feel like there's a cloud, a pall hanging over the whole country in a paranoid, surreal sort of way. It's embarrassing. It's dangerous. Our institutions and what we all stand for and what we expect this country to be. It's got nothing to do with the Democrats losing the election, or it's got nothing to do with the Republicans winning the election. Not our people or our country. Every time he talks about those things, there's just a rush. That's disingenuous, cynical, and fake. And I feel like it's important for people on the other side, not necessarily minorities, to speak about. Then Coach Popovich talks about this. He says that being born white, you have head start if you're starting off in the race. 100 meters there up in front of you and 50 meters there behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So how important is it for people that aren't minorities to speak on this issue and try to relate to us?
And that's part of the issue here is if you realize that there is that there are inequities, then and you're not doing your part to solve that, then you're part of the problem. And that what I think was Popovich's point was that it's not about guilting people or trying to take something away from from white people. It's just acknowledging and then becoming part of the solution to even the playing field.
Mm-hmm. And going back to your topic about homelessness and people needing to shed light on that issue, what was your opinion on when they had the Super Bowl here a couple years ago and them kicking all those homeless people out for all the tourists to come in and just think that San Francisco is this perfect city?
Well, I mean, that's just how we've operated for so long for things, you know. We're more worried about how things appear instead of how things are. And I thought that was completely it was disingenuous of the city to do that because anyone who lives in the Bay Area knows that San Francisco has a significant homeless problem. So it was a lie. And I applauded reporters who called it for what it was. It was a lie.
Mm-hmm. And another lie that people believe to have or they conceive is that you talked about this also is that people in the Bay Area, they think that it's just this perfect inclusiveness city where everyone is welcome, but you tend to shed light on the issues of people. There are people that are still hateful, and you want to shed light to that. Can you talk about an article or a piece that you've recently done that sheds that moment?
Every piece I tried to do that, but I think one of my most recent pieces, I spent time with a homeless camp on Telegraph Avenue in Oakland, and just around the corner from that camp, another camp had just been cleared because it was filthy.
Yeah.
And the camp had spilled out onto the streets, and the neighbors had gotten upset about that. But then I'm like, okay, so that's the narrative, that it's easy to blame homeless people for that. But then I wanted to show a camp where they are taking it upon themselves to keep the sidewalks clear, to sweep up after themselves, to actually almost, in a sense, form their own committee to keep this camp, I don't want to say respectable, but mm-hmm. even for themselves, to keep it clean. That's what I want to say. And that to me, that was important because that showed another side of homelessness instead of the easy, oh, well, it's dirty, they do a lot of drugs, they have so much stuff. Well, no, why don't we show the portraits of homeless people who are keeping their areas clean, who actually have jobs?
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they don't want to work or they're doing drugs all day. It's just a lot of the homeless people can't afford housing in the Bay Area. And that's something that I got to continue hammering home on people. It's so expensive to live here.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Mr. Taylor. Appreciate your time with me. And if you guys want to learn more about the issues that Mr. Otis Taylor covers, you can check him out on the San Francisco Chronicle. But now we're just going to take some questions from the audience about Mr. Otis Taylor's work. And first up here is Forrest Hunt.
I just wanted to ask you if you could give us some insight on the importance of our generation, in particular, registering to vote and be voting on these issues that are happening in our country.
Mm-hmm. So as far as issues, the voting is, this last election showed us how important voting is. Well, also showed us how Republicans have used gerrymandering to rig elections. But being invested in politics at an age where you can vote, that's important because it's from the local level to the national level. You can persuade the conversation. And I think most young people are not so interested in being divisive like the current administration. And, you know, without young people, without them voting, using their voting voice, we could enter a really, really dark period in this country.
Thank you.
All right. And if we don't have any other questions, that's going to do it for us here with Mr. Otis Taylor here at Voter Registration Day in front of Carol Riga Hall at Dominican University of California. Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Thank you again to Mr. Otis Taylor. Check out his work on the San Francisco Chronicle.
Hey, thank you.